And now for WEEI Football Sunday with Arkand, Mego, and Shime. Now, WEEI Football Sunday.
Welcome in. It's Boston Sports Original WEEI. This is Football Sunday. The day has finally arrived. We are finally here. We've already seen a couple of NFL games, one in America, one in Brazil. And now we see the New England Patriots make their maiden voyage here under the Gerard Mayo era. I'm Christian Arkand, Megan Ottolini, Chris Scheim here alongside. What's up, guys?
Hey.
Hi, Arkand.
This thing still works?
It still works.
All right.
Yeah, they didn't shut it down. They didn't retire that microphone. Maybe they should, but they have not yet. And yes, we are here with you until 12:35. Generally, we'll be on until 1 o'clock. But today, and I think next week, there's a Red Sox game. Those awesome Red Sox really gotta make room for them. They're really killing it there against the White Sox. So yes, we will pass it on to them in the pregame show at 12:35. But in the meantime, we have got so much stuff to get to. It is crazy how jam packed these shows are going to be going forward this season. We got the Polar Coaster coming up at 10:30. Megan Ottolini put the sounded the call out there on Twitter last night. Fitzy will be joining us at 11:15. Tommy Curran at 11. We'll get the Enactus at 11:30. Jermaine Wiggins and his keys coming up later on. Also, Andy Hart will be joining the show. And we got some surprises along the way as well. Let's go ahead and start where everybody wants to start, though, and that is the Gerard Mayo era here in New England begins today. It's a tough matchup, some tough customers there in the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that last year missed the playoffs, but they had a winning record and were certainly better than the Patriots were. So let's go ahead and start right there. Where would you grade this offseason in general as we take into account not just Elliott Wolf and all the things that he had to do in the draft, in free agency that he did or didn't do, I should say, and also training camp, preseason games, the decision to start Jacoby Brissett. Where do you think this team sits right now, Megan, as we get ready for him? Excuse me, Mego, as we get ready
I know,
for
we're 1 o'clock kickoff. Formal on I know. Football show.
When we first started working together in the 2 years ago, I remember I called you Megan once, and you're like, don't call me Megan. So I apologize. Won't do it again.
It feels like somebody's yelling at me, to be honest, because even in my personal life, it's almost never Megan. It's like, Megan. I would give it a C, and that mostly has to do with the draft, because I think that's a little bit of a generous grade. I think you saw a lot of flashes and stretches of what the ceiling, how high it can be for Drake May, and that's the most important move that you made the entire offseason, was drafting the quarterback that you're hoping is going to be the future. That's the biggest deal of this entire season, when he plays and how he's going to look. So I liked the pick at the time. I like it even more as training camp went on, and then in the preseason, I'm frustrated he didn't get more reps with the ones in practice, because I think he really earned that opportunity. But aside from that, look, like free agency, they basically just showed you they're expecting to get out of the blocks this season, and that's it, to use a track analogy. Like, they're not really interested in the race itself. They're just trying to get something started. And so they didn't go out and make any grand moves in free agency. They couldn't get Ayuk to come over here. I would give them an F if you were just looking at what they did with the offensive line. And I think they're going to pay for it dearly throughout this season. And it's going to be a real problem. But otherwise, I say C just because I like the pick of Drake May so much.
I love Drake May more than anybody in this city. I have liked him since before they drafted him that much.
I remember you and the guys all belly bumping after that pick got me.
I was thrilled. It made me uncomfortable. I have my Drake May jersey in the car. I was ready to go today, but
it's like Big O and Smurlis back in the day.
Yeah, like I was all in. But the issue is they did nothing to support the pick. So for me, it's a D. It has been so bad. You can see the horrible offensive line already. They did nothing. When you ask them about it, when you call them out on it too, they'll just tell you, well, we resigned Mike Onwenu. He was like the best tackle in free agency. Well, you didn't even have him at tackle to start the offseason here. You had him at guard. And so it just infuriates me.
I'll tell you what, in the locker room, he looks like a tackle.
Yeah, well, he's back to his Michigan days.
Big boy.
350. He is pushing even more than that, I would guess. But like, it's just, they put themselves in a horrible position. You're right. They got the right guy in Drake May for the future of their franchise, but they didn't start building around him yet. They just kind of let everything else fall to the wayside. And for me, that is just an absolute no-no.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you guys. I wasn't all that excited about the idea of drafting a quarterback onto this team based on the way last year went. I just thought that was going to be a recipe for disaster and a waste of a year for a guy, no matter who it was, whether it was Williams, whether it was Daniels, whether it was May or Nix or anybody else. I just sort of figured, all right, This is such a work in progress. This offense needs so much work that wasting a year of a rookie quarterback's deal just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I would have been okay with taking Russell Wilson and drafting a couple wide receivers and building an offense and then bringing the quarterback in. But that's not the way they went with it. They went with the quarterback this year, and in doing so, as you guys both pointed out, sort of just said, well, you know, we got our quarterback. The rest of it's just going to come in time, and that's not the way to do it. I don't think that that's a viable solution. I don't think that's a way to foster an environment where a quarterback can thrive. And in some ways, the fact that they're saying, all right, we're going to start with Brissett now, makes some sense to me. Like, I feel like I'd be hypocritical if I was saying, oh, you got to get him out there. You got to play him with this team. I wanted him to be out there because he's a third overall pick, but come on. Like, what? Who's he going to throw to? Who's he going to be behind? It's a mess. Like, this is a mess on this offense. And that I blame on Elliott Wolf mostly. I mean, I think that, you know, it's his first time doing it, and I understand that there's some parts of the job that aren't going to be easy, and he's following Bill Belichick, who I think had a lot of shortcomings as a GM, certainly in the last 5 years. But I look at this offseason, I look at what was accomplished, who was signed, who was brought in, and I hate it. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't like it. I think that there was a lot of other ways they could have gone. There's a lot of other players they could have gone. I heard Wolf say, you know, it was all guards and running backs. Well, you know, your guards and running backs aren't that good.
Your guards stink.
You could have upgraded your guards. You could have upgraded your running backs. That wouldn't have been a terrible thing to do, especially if you're planning on being a run-first team, which is what I kept hearing Gerard Mayo say.
I wrote about this week because this week, the ground-and-pound game that they want to run. If you're doing that, why does your offensive line look like this? And why are you acting like Ramondre Stevenson is Chubb out in Cleveland? I love Ramondre Stevenson. I think he is a great talent, and he has a lot of really good aspects. He's almost always been part of a duo back there. And on top of that, he's never had a top 10 season. A rushing season where he's a top, he's never put up those stats. The best he ever did was 2022. He was 13th in the league in rushing yards, and we all looked at that. That was Matt Patricia's offense.
Right.
Like, we were all laughing our asses off at how stupid
there.
That offense was.
There was potential there, and Stevenson, I think, has potential to be a good running back, but running backs only have like a 2 or 3 year window on average in their career where they're effective.
And there were guys out there who are way more electric than what you paid him for that money. Like, I mean, you look at Saquon Barkley on Friday night. He was phenomenal. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's tremendous in the running game. And I guess a large part of that is probably the Eagles' offensive line is 10 times better than yours. But again, like, your guards stink. You could have signed better guards. Guys like Jonah Jackson, Jonah Williams were out there available. Yep. You could have signed them. You chose not to. You didn't want to spend the money, even though you just have like $60 million in cap sitting around doing literally nothing. And then you overpaid Ramondre Stevenson, who, again, I like Ramondre as well. But as Mego pointed out, like, he's been a duo backfield his entire career, and now he's the lone guy. I don't expect it to work out as well as they want.
You had Tony Pollard out there. You had Swift out there. You had Derrick Henry out there.
Josh Jacobs was out there.
Barkley, who you just mentioned. Jacobs. I mean, listen, like, there were a lot of running backs you could have gone for, and I don't think this team is one running back away from competing.
No,
but when you talk about the offseason and you say, well, you know, they re-signed all their own guy, fine. You could have upgraded those positions. If there were a lot of running backs and guards out there, I don't want to hear, oh, well, we couldn't make an offer on those. Yes, you could have. You could have upgraded those positions on your team. It would have helped you.
The way that they talk about how they expect the offense to look, you'd think that they have the personnel of the Lions,
right.
Which it's the way that they talk about that. You think that they have that kind of offensive line and backs, and they just don't. And so I understand they're trying to put a nice spin on it and give you expectations of don't look so much at Jacoby Brissett because he's probably the 31st or 32nd starting quarterback in the league. Look at all this other stuff. Don't you guys love Ramondre Stevenson? He's on the media guy today. Like, aren't you excited about him? You guys like him, right? And I get that, but it's not enough. I'm wondering if you saw Andrew Callahan's interview that he had with Elliott Wolf in...
I did see this, yes.
And
we talked about it.
The
yeah.
little piece about tanking and, like, how disrespectful
how
that
undignified
is.
How undignified that would be.
I'm paraphrasing, but along the line, basically asked, like, oh, is this a tank? You know, are you guys just whiffing on this year? And it, well, we would never do that.
That's absolutely uncivilized.
Yeah, it's like,
if that's the case,
on,
though, you'd
guys
spend to the cap and you'd start the rookie quarterback who your coach even said is better than the guy you have playing quarterback.
Yeah, it just, it's hard. I think that they're trying to, like, walk this line very early of saying, we're doing things the right way. This is basically like Packers 2.0. We have so much respect for the game of football, the National Football League, and we're taking this back. We're doing this the smart way. Everyone just needs to be patient. And it's like, well, come on. There is other stuff that you could have done, and you just opted not to. And so it almost looks like you think losing is in your best interest for the draft next year.
Well, they're sitting on a fence, because if patience was, in fact, the number one thing for them, they were going to take their time and rebuild the right way, quote unquote, you would have traded out of number three. The Giants were willing to give you the sun and moon to move up to number three to get Drake May.
Okay, but don't you think that some in the front office definitely wanted to do that?
To trade out or to draft Drake May?
To trade out.
I don't think so.
I think there was probably some conflicting views there, and someone won out and said, no, we want the quarterback.
See,
I think that happened.
I don't. I think that would have been the old Belichick mentality, like to trade out and I'll get a quarterback wherever because I can grab Bo Nix or Michael Penix and make anything work. But with these guys, I don't think that was the case. I think they're like, yeah, we're going to draft a quarterback, but we're also going to preach patience because, you know, we don't want to rush him into things because that's what the Packers do, right? They draft a quarterback, he sits for a couple years, and then they come in.
Sits the behind
big,
the Hall
big
of Famer.
Difference is each guy sits behind a Hall of Famer. Like, that's the major difference here. And that's what bugs me when people say, oh, you know, Drake May needs to sit. Every guy that sat behind a playoff quarterback or a Hall of Famer. Like, Jacoby Brissett is neither of those things. And so to say he needs to sit behind this guy doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, would you call Alex Smith a, like,
he was a I mean, he was a playoff quarterback.
Yeah, but he wasn't.
Pro bowler. I mean,
he was a pro bowler and a playoff quarterback.
Like,
that team was 11-5.
That was a great team.
Yeah.
And you had the luxury of being a winning team behind him, but I'm not sure every single person has sat behind.
Well, I mean, when you look at the quarterbacks who have sat and then had success,
the
all of them
the
have
Packers did, yeah.
All of them have sat behind playoff quarterbacks
like
or Hall of Famers.
That's a crazy situation.
But, like, even go back to Tom Brady sitting behind Drew Bledsoe. Like, Drew Bledsoe was a playoff quarterback, had just gotten a $100 million contract. And you look at Patrick Mahomes sitting behind Alex Smith, the Packers situations. Like, all of these guys were sitting behind playoff quarterbacks. Eli Manning, when he got drafted, was behind Kurt Warner at first, who had, you know, won a Super Bowl and been to a Super Bowl with the Rams. Like, it's just, when you sit a guy, you're sitting him behind someone who can actually teach him things. In this situation, Drake May is already beyond what Jacoby Brissett can teach him.
Well, they're hoping that there's going to be behind the scenes that Ben McAdoo is going to teach him.
Let's
Drake May. That's what
they're stoked about Ben McAdoo.
McAdoo had a decent effect on Eli Manning his first couple of years. Like, he got him back into the swing of things offensively. All four quarterbacks that we've seen so far in the NFL, right? We've seen Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Jordan Love, who's going to be out for a while, and Jalen Hurts. All of those guys did not start week one. And some of them didn't start, you know, Love didn't start for 3 years. But Jalen Hurts sat behind Carson Wentz. Lamar Jackson sat behind Joe Flacco. You just mentioned Patrick Mahomes, and Love was behind Rodgers. So, I mean, that's not, it's one thing to sit a guy for an entire season. It's another thing to have him eventually start later on.
You can't redshirt him. Like, you can't redshirt Drake May.
I think that's
it's the biggest waste.
I agree.
And it's unfair to him for what he's shown so far.
But have you seen enough competence out of this front office and management to assume that they'd actually play Drake May?
I think it's too early to say. Like, I honestly don't think, I'm not in the position where I have to make yes or no decisions anymore.
Yeah.
So I have to say, like, I honestly don't. It's such a collaborative approach over there. It's very strange. I think that there is going to be a power dynamic that proves out this season. And a lot of that you'll be able to see through when they decide to play Drake May. I do think they're going to play him this season, especially because, by the way, Jacoby Brissett isn't exactly, he's going to take 1,000 sacks this season. He isn't exactly the most durable guy. I'm not, like, fingers crossed for an injury, but some of it is going to be out of their control at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, Josh McDaniels was on the Edelman podcast, and he even said, like, the one thing you look for in rookie quarterbacks is a guy willing to step up into the pocket.
Right.
Drake May's already showing that. Like, he's already showing that he's able to progress and do those
things. Yeah, what happened to him, like, tripping over himself in practice?
Yeah,
everybody's
like, oh, his footwork is so bad. I don't know. Those times he stepped up in the pocket and then, I don't know, hit Jalen Polk over the middle of the field, looked pretty good.
Footwork looked beautiful in the preseason.
I thought he looked good, too. That was against backups. When they did their joint practices with the Eagles, he was getting sacked left and right. You asked, is it a question about the competency of the front office? I don't think it's going to be a competency question. I think there's going to be pressure from ownership. If this thing really starts to sink, I think that the Kraft's not overtly. I mean, it'll be behind the scenes and back channels. Probably, you know, Robin Glazer going down the hallway there or something. But I think you're going to see some pressure come from that part of the building. And they're going to say,
Kraft
listen.
Kraft was in the locker room.
We got to start selling some jerseys here. We got to get people into this place.
No one
wants to watch this. And that's not just, I mean, people are showing up at Gillette, but watching it on TV. I mean, they're going to be the longest odds probably most of these weeks. They have the biggest spread right now. They're 7.5 point underdogs. I think that actually went down a point or two.
It's gone down from 9.5.
Down to 7.5, which is still the biggest spread of the entire weekend. So, I mean, that's something that you're probably going to keep seeing. The second closest is Buffalo and Arizona, and after that, everything's moderately close. I think that you have a lot of especially early on in the season when they're making these books, they do they get pretty close with some of these. But the Patriots are going to be well behind, and I think that today is going to be a very interesting look at what they've built and how they can deploy it against the tough Cincinnati Bengals team who is playing at home at Paycor Stadium. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Chris Scheim going to catch you up on what's trending, and when we come back, Megan Ottolini put out the call on her emotional roller coaster, and we'll get to that and the results next. Back here, NFL Football Sunday, WEEI, Christian Arcan, Megan Ottolini. We got Chris Scheim here as well as we take you up until just before kickoff. Usually we'll be going right up until 1 o'clock. Today we'll be stopping at 12:35 to get you to Red Sox pregame. And that song you hear right now is specially requested by Mego because it is time for the emotional roller coaster. Mego, what's the poll today?
So I put out this poll. What's your expectation for the Patriots against the Bengals today? Very straightforward. We'll see how this evolves because it may get more and more emotional. But today, we don't really know, you know, who this team exactly is going to be. So here
emotions
are your options.
Emotions are high today, I think. People are emotional. This might be as emotional as it gets, honestly, this season. Like, in terms of, like,
well,
positive
emotions. Well, there are other emotions like despair.
Despair, yeah.
Despondency.
Sure.
Anger.
But right now, in terms of, like, positive, this might be as positive as it gets today. Which, after that segment we just had, is kind of sad. But, like,
Reinject some positivity with Drake May if he hits the field
maybe,
this year.
Maybe.
Absolutely. So, expectations. I'm kind of surprised here. The options were win, keep it close, or blowout loss. 13% of respondents say win.
Wow.
They think that the Patriots are going to win against Cincinnati. Keep it close, 47%. Blowout loss, 40%. So, look, overwhelmingly, people expect this team to lose today.
Mm-hmm.
13%, though, they think they're going to pull off an upset, which would be quite a start to the Gerard Mayo era.
I think there's a 13% chance they win this game. Like, that's,
I agree.
I think that's
really?
About right. Yeah, I think a 13% is about where I'd put it.
It feels a little high to me.
I mean, it may be.
If T. Higgins and Jamar Chase are out, your odds immediately become way, way more. Because, I mean, Andre Yoshivas, does that name scare you? Does that really send chills down your spine? Like, it's just, it puts you in a situation where it's like, okay, Joe Burrow just can't beat me, and this is a guy who also doesn't throw 3 straight days at practice because of this weird wrist injury he has. So, if the Patriots defense is any good, and you can run the football, you can win this game 13-10.
Joe Burrow last year, watching him on the sideline after he got hurt, where he was, remember that clip of him? He's on the sideline holding the ball, and the ball's like sliding out of his hand.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
dark. I watched that, and I thought, is this guy going to play football again? Like, is he going to be the same? Because, you know, I remember, like, when Tua kept getting all those concussions and everyone thought he was going to quit football and that he'd never be the same either, and he came back the next year and he was fine, set all these records and all that.
Yeah, but then martial arts saved his life.
That's true. That did happen. I don't know if I don't know if Joe Burrow's doing doing judo or what he's doing.
I don't think so.
That like, stuck with me. You know, that clip of him on the sideline and the ball sliding out of his hand, that stuck with me because if you can't even hold the ball, you know, like, let alone throw it, that seems like a long road to come back from. Now, he seems like he's fine. They played him, I think, a little bit in the preseason. If Chase and Higgins aren't playing, Higgins is not, I think. It's not official yet. We'll know at 11:30. But doubtful, I mean, I think that tells you a lot right there. But, yeah, you're right. Andre, whatever his name is.
Yoshivas.
Trenton Irwin, Jermaine Burton, the rookie. They, outside of those two, and they traded away their running back, they traded away Mixon in the offseason. So it's not the same Bengals as before.
No, not at all. And it, I mean, this is a defense that ranked 28th last year. So they are gettable on that side of the ball. And then, as you pointed out, the Joe Burrow injury is a wrist injury that normally only offensive and defensive linemen get from punching each other. This is not an injury that quarterbacks ever get. And so this is something brand new. It's kind of uncharted territory. He may look cool walking into the stadium, but I love Joe Burrow, but it's just, I got to see it to believe it at this point. Like, I'm not sure that he's going to be the same anytime soon.
He's been pretty candid about his throws have, like, going where he wants them to go, the accuracy, but that the spin hasn't been there for mm-hmm. him. And that's something that has been improving throughout their training camp and preseason. But I think he's pretty open about he's not completely back to himself yet. It's just one of these things where now with Burrow, I think people pencil in that the Bengals are going to have a bad September every year. Mm-hmm. And I just think at some point that's got to change. A lot of it hinges on Chase and whatever is going on with him today, his availability. I think that kind of is the game there, because otherwise I agree. Like, at some point Joe Burrow will be 2019 Tom Brady throwing without Julian Edelman out there, essentially, is like what that offense would look like. So I agree with that. I have started wondering if everybody has just penciled in this Patriots defense as being very good without really considering everything that's gone on there.
Yeah, but and, like, they can
and everybody
be good.
Talks about Matthew Judon because Matthew Judon was out for most of the season last year. So it's
they were good without him last year.
Okay, but Barmore, I think, is just a much bigger loss than people are giving credit for. And I'm not trying to sit here and be doom and gloom. It's just, I feel like it's kind of a shortcut that people are taking to say, well, if you can keep the game in the low teens and Joe Burrow doesn't have his full-powered offense on the other side, this could be a game that the Patriots defense wins for you. And I look at it and I go, I mean, yeah, it's a lot easier day for Gonzalez. He doesn't have to look between Higgins and Jamar Chase and have that assignment.
Easier day for all those guys.
Easier day for your entire secondary. But we're just kind of looking at it and expecting, okay, next man up defensively, and Bill Belichick's not here anymore.
That's the bigger deal to me. Like, I don't even necessarily take in the Barmore injury. Like, yeah, it's an impact, but at the same time, I think this front four will still be good. I think Keon White will be good. I think Godchild will be good.
I have a big belief in Keon White this year.
I do as well.
I think he's going to be the MVP of the team this year.
I hope so, because the guy has that just killer mentality, and you want to see that. But my big question is the scheme, right? Like, if you know they don't have Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, you should be loading there should be eight guys in the box. You leave Gonzalez and Jonathan Jones out on islands. Just let them do their thing. And you just rush the quarterback and stop the run. That's all you have to do. And if they can't do that, if they're not smart enough to do that, if they're sitting in base coverage and they're just, hands underneath their butt cheeks, just sitting there doing nothing, then I get worried.
Yeah, and there's cause to be worried, about the defense and the whole team in general. But I think when it comes to, especially a team like the Bengals, right, a high-powered offense, we'll see how much of those guys are actually playing, but you still consider the Bengals to be a high-powered offense. You always, going into games like this against teams like that, assumed that Bill Belichick would have a game plan, that he'd have a real something ready to go. He'd have something for these guys that they hadn't seen before, that, and it didn't always work, but generally you felt confident, even in the later years, that Belichick would have some kind of scheme, something schemed up that would make life difficult for Joe Burrow or Josh Allen, whoever it was, whatever quarterback was out there, and their offense, especially these big, high-powered offenses who everyone thought, oh, there's no way you're going to slow them down. He would slow them down. I mean, he'd been doing that for 25 years, and it would continue to. He's gone. Gerard Mayo was his understudy, basically. I mean, he learned everything he knows from him, and he's a defensive-minded coach with his own staff now, with Hightower and Covington and the rest of those guys. How confident are we that Gerard Mayo can sort of take the reins of scheming up this defense for a team like the Bengals?
I think this is going to be Mayo's strength. I really do. I think that in talking to the defensive players, it's just a lot of continuity from what Bill was doing. Can he be as creative as Bill? Can he, as you say, scheme up? I would say, like, more just it's game planning week to week and trying to pick out the weaknesses there. If he can't do that, then why did you put him in charge of this team? I understand he can be a great leader of men and all of that, but at some point you have to have the brilliant football mind to be strong on one side of the ball, especially when you have Covington and Hightower and less experienced guys underneath you. So I have to be confident that Jerod Mayo is able to be creative that way week to week, because otherwise putting him in place is just utter incompetency.
Yeah, I do have some faith here. Like, I believe that they, if you spend this much time under Bill Belichick, something has to rub off. Like, something in some way has to rub off on you. Clearly, it wasn't his attitude.
Well,
which is phrasing.
Well, phrasing, first of all. But second of all, how many of these other Belichick disciples went off to be head coaches and nothing rubbed? I mean, really, like, they couldn't, put one foot in front of the other.
I agree. So, sure, but Bill O'Brien had some success, to his credit.
He's maybe especially, the best example. But yeah,
and then the other guys, though, tried to imitate Bill, whereas Jerod clearly is not doing that. That's been
true.
The whole focal point of the offseason here is he is completely a different person
than
Bill.
Bill, yeah.
So hopefully, at least when it comes to the game planning, something kind of, he learned something from Belichick, because if he learned anything, plus having been a linebacker in the league for as long as he was a top draft pick. Like, this guy is a
did
guy
you hear
who
he worked
understands
at
football. Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
When did he work at Optum? I didn't know that.
They have no connection to the Patriots. So.
Interesting.
None. Yeah.
Do you guys know about the cold shower thing? Did you read Mike Reese this morning?
What?
So
I know why people.
Did he interview
Fitzy? Showers?
Fitzy's a big cold shower guy.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, big cold shower.
Well,
I'm a big
that's
outdoor shower person.
Same. Love outdoor
just
showers.
Like,
outdoor
totally
cold showers.
Overrated.
Sure. Whatever. Have you ever taken a bucket shower?
I don't think
like
so.
Like the ice bucket challenge?
No, like when you don't have access to running water and you have to use like a bucket to shower.
Where is this happening?
I've always had access to running water.
I did it in the Dominican.
Brag.
I was going to say, this feels like another part of the world.
Yes.
Devon Godchow spoke with Mike Reese and said the discipline aspect, the toughs he's talking about Jerod Mayo. He always tells us, I'm taking cold showers in the morning. Football is more mental than people think. People focus on the physical. You have to be strong, and that helps. But if you don't have it up here, you have no chance. And some players believe that the resolve and the attempt to sort of build and the surprising people is going to be a result of Jerod Mayo's cold shower approach.
So that's kind of the weird, in that weird biohacking area of guys being like, I'm doing cold plunges because and lowering my resting heart rate that way and all that kind of weird pseudoscience that I really don't buy into.
Sounds like
whatsoever.
Joe Mazzulla talking right there.
Yes.
Doesn't it, a little bit? Like,
I don't hate that though. Joe Mazzulla's had some success.
He's
had a lot of talent.
He's had success because of the talent on his roster.
Not
sure.
Jiu-jitsu in the cold showers
still,
if he's even doing that.
Still a championship coach. So, you know.
It's he an seems interesting
like,
part.
He seems like someone who would take a shower in like the blood of a goat or something, you know, like not like a cold shower would be too normal for him.
Yeah, he would eat the heart of a horse just to like prove himself.
Joe Cardona said, turning the water on cold when you get in the shower can seem like something little, but it's part of something that most people don't want to do. When the team takes on the mentality, that's part of building the culture that Jerod is trying to instill.
Cardona saying that they're all taking cold showers?
I think so. I think this is like the thing. They're all doing that.
Team cold showers.
All together at once.
There's a change in the way that they're doing stuff down there right now, where we used to get the players in the locker room after practice, which sucked because everybody was trying to go home from practice, the players. So you'd get like three special teamers who were hanging out in the locker room. Now we go in the locker room before practice. And I will say, guys are showering before practice a ton. So maybe these are the cold showers that they're talking about.
They shower before
There's
practice.
Only when one way to get the proof.
I feel like that is not as
productive.
Are
you saying put cameras
shower.
In the shower? Is that what we're saying?
No.
Okay, because I think that's illegal.
Yeah, I believe that is illegal.
I'm pretty sure it is. Anyways, back to the poll for a second. The number one response was not blowout loss. It was keep it close. So Patriots fans, for better or for worse, whether they think they're going to win this game or not, think that this will be a competitive game, that this won't be a blowout like Vegas thinks it's going to be with the big line. It's not a huge line, but 7.5. It's the biggest line of the weekend, to be sure. Patriots fans sounds like optimistic that this is going to be not an embarrassing spectacle.
If there's no Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, I would take the 7.5.
On that note, apparently Adam Schefter, friend of the station, just said on ESPN that Jamar Chase is, quote, legitimately questionable ahead of today's game. So not just questionable.
Legitimately.
It's an actual
questionable
question.
We're putting an adjective in front of it. Does that change your expectation of Jamar Chase playing at all?
I don't think he plays. I've been kind of on this belief now for about 2 days. I just don't think he plays. I don't think he's had enough time to train and get ready and get in actual football shape this week. And I almost feel like they're, in a way, punting on this week. Joe Burrow's trying to get healthy. This is almost like a preseason game for him. Neither one of their star receivers will play. They need to figure out their offensive line a little bit. They now have Trent Brown, old friend Trent Brown. Like, they're trying to figure their crap out as well, and it feels like this is going to be a low-scoring, slugfest, ugly, ugly football game.
All right, so it sounds like you're on the under.
Yeah, big time.
All right, we're going to get to our picks a little bit later on in the show. What does a win for the Patriots mean today? What does that mean for the season? I mean, I know that it's one game and they have a lot more to go, but starting off the season with a win, based on just how down on the team it seems like everybody, locally, nationally, everywhere is, what does a win mean for Mayo and this team?
It means a lot more for Mayo than I think it does for the team. Not saying like the team wouldn't be extremely excited to take down Cincinnati, whether it's just Burrow and a bunch of backups. I still think that the team would get very excited. But for Mayo, it's just the expectations around this team have been so low, basically since free agency, that I think that it just gives him a little bit more breathing room into, you go into Seattle then the following week. That's a gettable game. When
we sat down
and looked at the schedule in the first six games or so, you look at it and you circled Seattle as that's probably your best opportunity. Now that you're seeing that there's injuries or whatever with the Bengals availability, all of a sudden, like, it extends the honeymoon for Jerod Mayo 100%, and I think cedes the power to him a little bit further in his decision making for at least the first stretch of the season.
Yeah, but I feel like winning this game is bad for the New England Patriots.
Because they keep going with Jacoby?
Bingo. Yeah, it just prevents Drake May from touching the field, and the longer you wait to put Drake May on the field, the less reps he gets, the less opportunity he gets, and the less ready he'll be for next season.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you there. I'd like to see May sooner rather than later, and I do think that could play into it, but if this is a season, like if this is an actual season for the Patriots, like if they're in the playoff discussion by week eight, you know, by at the trade deadline, isn't that better? You know, isn't that better than just, all right, you know, they suck, they're going to lose every week. I know they're not, but just, I'm talking for our purposes of doing a show every week.
Sure.
And, like, discussing the team and having some kind of hope that maybe there will be something a lot. And then, you know, the despair of them losing it, the emotions, the emotional roller coaster. I think that matters here. I do.
It definitely matters. I agree with you, but I side a little bit more with Shime in that I don't want to go back to 2021. In the long view, like, now that we have the perspective of where we are now, I look back at that and I go, it just kind of was a waste of time that season. It was really fun in the moment. Absolutely. Even after the crazy win game in Buffalo, we were all sitting there like just doing backflips. But I think it just stunted. It set you back in the rebuild that had to happen post-Brady. And so I would rather them have real development in their young players and know who they have in Drake May and hopefully find something with Polk and further develop DeMario Douglas and be moving in a real direction rather than just being like spinning their wheels and being kind of okay, not going anywhere in the draft. No, I don't want to tank. Like, that's a very boring season to cover. I agree, Arcan, but I also don't want just to be kind of mediocre, and we're supposed to be excited about that.
Well, it sounds like you'd rather tank to be mediocre.
I'd
honestly rather they're mediocre, to be honest with you.
I wish that you didn't have to choose between those options.
I wish they were mediocre.
I mean,
too.
All want them to go 17-0. I mean, let's be honest here, but like, that's, if it's between mediocre and tanking, I'd rather they're mediocre.
Well, I agree in that regard. I want them to be mediocre, but I want them to be mediocre with Drake May at quarterback.
Drake May.
Like,
yeah.
That's my big issue. I want to see him grow. I think it's awesome that Jalen Polk is going to have a great opportunity the first 4 weeks of the season with Kendrick Bourne out on IR. Like, that's really good for Jalen Polk. You're going to see him get multiple opportunities here at the beginning of the season, and hopefully those carry over even when Bourne does come back.
Yep.
Whereas Drake May just needs to get on the field in order to see any kind of growth first.
NBC Sports Boston did a couple of simulations. You see the Stratomatic simulations?
Oh, yeah.
They did. So
we
one was with
Friday.
Yes, right. You and Kayla Burton, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you guys were talking about this.
It was our girls' show.
And it was one season with Drake May as the quarterback, one season with Brissett as the quarterback for the entire season, right? Not like switching back and forth. It's one with, you know, 17 games of this quarterback, one with 17 of the other. 4-13 with Brissett, 8-9 with Drake May.
Yeah, that's what I like.
What's a better outcome there?
8-9 with Drake May.
8-9 with Drake May and a worse draft pick?
Because then Drake, yes, I don't care about the, like, you can find a good player at 15 or 16. And if Drake May is 8 wins in his rookie season, he is going to be uber confident heading into year two, and you're immediately a playoff team in year two. As long as you hit on whoever you take in the first round, hopefully it's an offensive lineman, and you use some of that cap space that you were willing to sign a guy like Brandon Ayuk with, like, you're going to be a good team the following season, and Drake May is going to be a playoff quarterback in year two, which is ideal for this team.
8 wins under Drake May would suggest that you're not in a Bryce Young situation.
No, not even close.
You're much closer to Josh Allen, yeah, and you're CJ developing and, in yeah. real time. I wouldn't go so far as CJ Stroud, but like you have something very real there. And I think that that should be the point of this whole season. It doesn't mean that you should be playing him in week one or that he needs to play by week four. I'm not putting that timeline on it, but that's really what the season is about.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. If you'd like to join the conversation here, it's NFL Sunday on WEEI. Coming up next, we'll be joined by the voice of the fan. Fitzy will call in, not from the tailgate, although that will be happening this year. Fitzy is going
to
be our eyes and ears on the ground in the tailgate lots.
Have the dump button ready for that.
Absolutely we will. And you know what? I was asking Ken about this. I was like, can we bring the shed back? You guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I know.
About? Can we bring that back so we can all be out there?
And
Ken was
no.
like, absolutely not. So I guess
that
not.
Place reeked of cigars.
I'm sure it did, among other things, and BO, too. Anyway, Fitzy from Parts Unknown will be joining us next. WEEI NFL Sunday, Christian Arkin, Megan Ottolini, Chris Scheim, and joining us right now from, I don't know where he is. He's not at Gillette, I don't think. Although it's Fitzy, so maybe he could be. You know, he might just hang out there. Right?
He like lives there in the parking lot.
Sleeping on the couch like Bill Belichick. Fitzy, you there?
I live in parts unknown, and today, as always, Arkan, I am coming to you from the only place I want to be and where my Valhalla Viking ship will go one day, the heart of Patriots Nation. Let's go!
Absolutely. All right, Fitzy, we talked for the first segment about expectations for this team, expectations from the offseason. The day has finally arrived. All the takes are basically out the window now. What do you expect to see today from these New England Patriots?
First of all, let me just say straight up, and it's not because I have to give her her flowers because it's her first NFL Sunday morning show, but Mego, I'm going to tell you straight up right now, if the New England Patriots play half as fire as your Twitter game this morning, then they are walking out of Paycor Stadium with a massive dub. Did I see you make a Portrait of Dorian Gray reference?
That was yesterday, and then I was very nervous that it was not going to be, someone in the mention said that it was too esoteric. And then esoteric. And then I had to Google esoteric to find out what that meant. So you see, like, just because you're well-read doesn't necessarily mean you're smart.
No, exactly. But it is a perfect reference as well. I have long thought that there are definitely, like, for fans of Christopher Nolan movies, not to get too pop cultural on a football Sunday, but kind of like the same way The Prestige, spoiler alert, ends, there's probably 100 Tom Brady's in formaldehyde in his basement at his house someplace, just to always be ready, because he's too beautiful. And side note to everyone, obviously, I'll be doing the Six Rings Live post-game show with Andy Hart here on the flagship of your Boston Red Sox and all great sports talk in Boston, WEEI. I full well expect people to be letting us know throughout the course of the post-game show how Brady is doing. And bad news for everyone, to think that Tom Brady is not going to be the Tom Brady of calling football games, you guys are in for a rude awakening. I think he's going to be great. Now, back to the football
game. Hold on. Was he the Tom Brady of that little interview we did? Because
yeah.
I didn't think it was all that great.
I watched it live. I think people are being very harsh about that, to be honest.
I thought it was pretty cheesy.
How could you not have expectations through the roof on this guy? If you saw his last hit, Arkand, that he did with Cigar Face, what's his name there? Colin Cowherd mm-hmm. with the giant desk on Fox.
Yes.
It was 20 minutes of, oh my God, you remember everything. Just like there was that social media clip last week where he broke out the binders that this psychopath still carries and keeps about every single game and the notes he and Belichick had. I mean, greatness comes at a price. Sure, it may have been his marriage to the world's most famous power walker, but you know what? It was worth it because Tom Brady is football and he's also a Patriot.
All right, what do you expect today?
I think you are going to see the absolute best effort of any game the New England Patriots play with Jacoby Brissett under center. He may have to play like the number 14 he's wearing on his back is a throwback to old Stevie neck roll because of the offensive line that he's got in front of him, which I'll be honest, Arkan, both of us probably built sandcastles at Nantasket Beach growing up that were stronger and had more fortitude than this offensive line.
Classic Nantasket reference.
As always, hey, one fried dough for you, Shime Time. You've earned it, Awaken 180. But listen, like, if the Patriots are ever going to have everything go their favor to make it their kind of game, which is a, you know, punch through the earth and drag you down to hell kind of, you know, power run, rock fight, tenacious defense type of game, this is going to have to be it. Like, you know, like you don't have T. Higgins, which was a shocker that he went out on Friday with the hamstring issue. Jamar Chase, we just saw Schefter said a little while ago, is legitimately questionable.
Legitimately.
Like, that's a new list. Is that a new designation, by the way? Can I get a clarification on that? So you're going to be looking at a team that has a new running back in Zach Moss, this kid Chase Brown, which apparently may be the better of their two running backs, and a wide receiving core of Trent Irwin, Jermaine Burton, who is basically the Javon Baker of the Bengals, talented but troubled, and Andre Yoshivas. Oh, an old pal, Mike Gesicki. I mean, as great and as John Wick and Psycho as Joe Burrow may be, Christian, at the same time, I full well expect the Patriots to corral and contain them enough to give themselves a chance to catch a 50-50 ball in the second half, to make a big run, to force the Bengals into a mistake. This is the day for the Patriots to assert the fact that they are going to fight like hell in every game this year, even though they may not be that talented.
Fitzy, what does a win today do for confidence in Jerod Mayo from the Patriots fan perspective? Because I feel like it's fallen off a little bit since the Thundercat press conference.
Oh, boy. No more Young Thundercat. That's a dollar in the Young Thundercat jar, Mega. You're not allowed to say. I'd almost rather you hear you say Bernard Pollard than say Young Thundercat on the show. What does it do for fan confidence? It does a ton. Because as many of us and any of us that traffic in social media and try to keep our pulse on the Pats Nation feelings know, there's not a lot of confidence. There's even still a lot of resent towards Jerod Mayo, and that's not because of the way he handled the competition versus the plan or burn some cash and some of the other things he said that he probably wanted to walk back. There are still people that just wish Belichick was there and hate the way the organization made their decisions. And today, if Mayo can have a team go out there and play, I can't believe I'm going to draw back on this reference, a Belichickian effort. You know, if the defense, if Jabril Peppers and Kyle Duggar make their presence known early, if Godshaw and his $5,000 ascot he wears on his podcast can show up and hold down the fort on the defensive line, and if Keon White and Josh Uche can force the issue and make Trent Brown and Orlando Brown and all the other Browns on the line sweat today a little bit, I think it's going to go a long way, Mego, in making people believe, hey, listen, I don't love the way that Mayo has handled a lot of the issues and how he's rocked the mic so far, but his team looks like they care and they're out there to kick ass. So I think it's huge that they put forth a representative effort today.
So we've talked a lot about the defensive side of the ball, Fitzy, but on offense, what does Jacoby Brissett have to do today to really kind of at least garner some respect from fans and kind of forget about Drake May, at least for 5 seconds?
Be able to evade the pass rush that'll come often from the likes of, you know, Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson, who himself is playing angry and looking for a contract. Throw the ball to his team, not the other team, especially in the end zone when Austin Hooper's wide open. And just look competent. Look the part of the guy that they believed was the best asset for them to start the season, because everybody should go to their chalkboard, Bart Simpson style, at the opening of The Simpsons and write down, I will not tweet, it's time to put in Drake May. I will not tweet, it's time to put in Drake May. This is the guy. This is the girl we've done going to the dance with, Chime. So as long as Jacoby Brissett doesn't fumble, can evade the pass rush, makes the right read, and guides the team towards progress. If he doesn't turn the ball over a lot and looks like he was the right choice, I mean, that's basically all you can ask for. And if he can spread the ball around, you know, a few quick hitters to pop, maybe we get Jalen Polk involved early as well, I think that'll be huge for them, because, you know, I caught up with some folks on our sister podcast in Cincinnati. It's Always Game Day in Cincinnati the other day. And they think they're going to get the best effort they can from the Patriots. And they don't believe that the Bengals defense is anywhere near back where it should have been from a couple years ago. Don't forget, last year they gave up the second most yards in the, they were 17th in points, I think, but they gave up the second most yards in the NFL to 376 a game. So again, this is a team that could be ripe for an upset or a really close one.
All right, Fitzy, before we let you go here, I'm not sure if you've seen this yet, but Tyreek Hill arrested on his way to the game in Miami. You can see him. There's
for delivering
video
a baby
it.
On the highway in Miami?
It said it was some sort of driving infraction. Do you care to comment on Tyreek Hill? And I don't know if I can think of another time a guy getting arrested on his way to the game.
Scotty Scheffler.
I was just going to say
that. Scotty Scheffler did it
full Scheffler.
Care to comment on that, Fitzy, before we let
you go? Man, I would hate to say something about such a terrific person that I love so much. It is what it is. Will he be active? Are they gonna let him play today?
So Rosenhaus was out there on the sidewalk with him, and Rosenhaus told reporters he is expecting to go and play. So yes, I'm sure
he's going to. I mean, that must have been a hell of a driving infraction to be pulled over and arrested on his way to the football game as well. Hey, listen, maybe he's just as excited as the rest of us to get the game back on. In New England, it's been 200.
He was speeding. Yeah, right.
Yeah, he was speeding. Although honestly, like. It's dumb. Don't spit. We've seen some terrible things happen with NFL players, but, driving infractions late at night, going too fast. Everybody slow down. And if you're not in the right mindset to do it, call a Lyft or an Uber and just take care of yourself.
Very good. All right, Fitzy, we look forward to talking with you all season long, my friend, either from parts unknown or from the parking lot there, as you'll be our eyes and ears on the ground for these tailgates at home games. Talk to you later, all right?
I can't wait, my man. And don't forget, everybody, there will be a live, unfiltered Six Rings halftime show across the WEEI and Fitzy GFY socials. And, of course, the best postgame show in town, Fitzy and Hart on the Six Rings postgame show live here on WEEI after the Sox and Pats game.
All right. Go! There you go. One half of the Six Rings podcast, which is now, I didn't even know this is the halftime show, which we'll have here as well as the postgame show with Andy Hart, who we will be talking to in just a little bit. If I was Tyreek Hill, I would have just run. I would have just run away. I would have gotten out of the car and run to the stadium. What are they going to catch him?
It would have been it would have been super bad. It's the fastest kid alive.
Exactly.
It's the fastest kid alive.
Those cops have got to be so relieved. That he didn't decide to just get out and start running. Because imagine that. Imagine everybody's got their phone out and you're trying to chase Tyreek Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. That
you're
would be,
never living that down.
Seth Rogen would look like Carl Lewis next to those guys. I think that he did them all a favor by not running. But that's probably what I would have done. Anyway, 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. When we return, Tommy Curran joins the show.